We have now got near 5,000 prisoners in New York, and many of them are such ragamuffins as you never saw in your life. Letter of a British officer, published in the London Packet newspaper. I had no time to ponder Corzine's fate. Madam commanded that a supper be thrown to celebrate the capture of Fort Washington, complete with turtle soup. The house fair exploded with dust and activity. The junior officers cleared out their cots, clothing, and maps from the second-floor drawing room so we could scrub and polish it from ceiling to floor. The kitchen hearth was crowded with irons heating to press the tablecloths and serviettes. Madam hired the cook from the city tavern to prepare the meal. Folks said he had a way with turtles. She then chose the prettiest of the soldier wives to wait at the tables. The ugly ones and Sarah with her big belly were to stay in the kitchen to assist the cook and wash up. My job was to ferry the food up the stairs and the dirty crockery down. The food began arriving long before sunup, packed into crates and hauled by sleepy-eyed boys. Three turtles, each the size of a footstool, came in a wooden pen. The sound of their flippers scratching made Sarah yelp in fright. Two of the turtles kept their heads tight against their shells. The third stretched out his neck and watched the commotion with wet, solemn eyes. While we scurried to finish the house, and the cook butchered the turtles and plucked the pheasants, the hairdresser arrived to tend to Madam. He spent hours applying pomatum wax, padding, and lengths of brick-colored hair to fashion a high roll on Madam's head. The hair swept off her brow and soared into the air like a wave curling before a ship's prow. I thought the wave might crumble, but Madam did not ask my opinion. She wanted a pot of hot chocolate made with 2 handfuls of sugar, which was a shocking amount. Sarah and the cook were exchanging heated words in the kitchen. Empty turtle shells stood drying in the corner, and the cook's assistant stirred the thick soup bubbling over the fire. I grabbed the chocolate pot and left, not wanting to see what became of the poor creatures' heads. As I served the hot chocolate and tidied the chamber, Madam rubbed her face with Venetian Bloom Water Beauty Wash, said to remove wrinkles. After that came a layer of Molyneux's Italian paste to make her skin white as bleached linen. It made her resemble a corpse. And then the final triumph. She used a tiny brush to paint a thin line of glue above each eye. Madam opened an envelope and shook out 2 gray strips of mouse fur, each cut into an arch. Leaning toward the mirror, she glued the mouse fur onto her own eyebrows, making them bushy and thick as the fashion required. In truth, she looked like a woman with 2 lumps of mouse fur stuck on her face. A delicate bell sounded overhead, Lady Seymour summoning help. "The guests will be arriving soon," Madam said, admiring her reflection. "Aunt Seymour wishes to be seated in advance of them. You may assist her." After I helped the lady limp from her chamber to her place near the head of the long table, I placed a foot warmer filled with hot coals under her chair and spread a woolen blanket on her lap. She thanked me kindly and looked about. "When I was young, we dined thus every night," she said with a sigh. I could scarce credit it. The table was covered by the finest linen tablecloth I'd ever seen. Each place had china plates, crystal glasses, and ivory-handled knives and forks. Candles were positioned every 3 hands. Salt cellars, each with a tiny spoon, and pepper mills were set in easy arm's reach of each place. Smaller tables and sideboards were positioned at the edges of the room to hold trays and dishes. One table was covered with wine bottles. Candlelight reflected back and back again in the polished mirrors that hung from the walls. I caught a glimpse in the hearth mirror of a girl with a mark on her cheek that trumpeted her shame. I quickly turned my eyes away. There was a heavy knock on the front door. "It begins," Lady Seymour said. "Go below, child." I set the tray loaded with the turtle soup bowls on the table by the door. 3 more trays needed to be brought up the stairs, but I allowed myself a quick peek at the company before I fetched them. The table was crowded with officers wearing splendid uniforms and perfectly powdered wigs, along with several of Master Lockton's business companions. Lockton wore a cardinal red satin waistcoat, black satin coat and breeches, and shoes with silver buckles. The new clothes could not hide the fact that the master was grinding himself down with work. Long hours serving the British commandant had melted off the fat from his second and third chins and created heavy black circles under his eyes. But his bags of gold grew fatter, and that was what he cared for the most. Madam reigned over her end of the table with the occasional flutter of her fan. The wave of hair above her brow threatening to crash at any moment. Lady Seymour, the only other woman present, looked like an elegant spider wrapped in her black lace shawl. Her eyes were lively in the candlelight, and her cheeks had color in them for the first time in weeks. The officer next to her was the size and shape of Edward, the shaggy bull who lived down the road from us in Rhode Island. The man did not have a ring in his nose, but he laughed with an impatient snorting sound. I hurried up and down the stairs with the remaining trays of soup, then the roasted tongue and mushrooms. The serving girl cut the meat on Lady Seymour's plate before setting it down so that the weakness of her arm would not hinder her. The young soldier who was appointed wine steward danced around the backs of the guests, keeping their glasses full. The conversating flowed as fast as the wine, the taking of Fort Washington, news from London, plans for a fox hunt. At this last, an officer joked that the next fox would be a tall sort from Virginia by the name of George Washington. That caused hearty laughter all around and glasses raised. A serving girl hissed at me to go back to the kitchen. When I entered the room a half hour later, my arm shook under the weight of the tray. The cook had prepared enough to feed a battalion. Pheasant stuffed with figs, stewed oysters, potted larks, greens cooked with bacon, pickled watermelon rind, and buttered parsnips. The pheasant smelled good. I had hopes that some might find its way into the scraps bucket. By the time I lugged in the dessert tray, rice pudding, lemon biscuits, two creamed pear tarts, and an ice cake, the fire was blazing and the room much warmer. Lockton had freed the top buttons of his waistcoat, and two of the officers had loosened their lace neckcloths. The heat had softened the glue of Madam's left mousy eyebrow, and it had begun to free itself from her face. She did not notice this. The serving girls and wine steward watched the progress of the eyebrow and fought to keep the smiles from their faces.